Genesis 1 says that God created man in his own image. What does that mean? Welcome to A Good Word, a weekly radio program formerly known as Probe, which explores issues of faith. Our current series focuses on Old Testament couples. My name is Paul Dibdahl. My conversation partners today are Zdravko Stefanovic, professor of the Old Testament, and Carl Kosart, professor of the New Testament. And we are all three colleagues in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. Welcome to Conversation Partners. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
The title of our lesson is Adam and Eve, the Intended Ideal. Let's start with the question I asked just a moment ago. In Genesis 1, God creates man in his own image. And before we move to the question of image, I'd like to just focus on that term, man. Does this mean somehow that God has created males in his own image in some special way as opposed to females? How should we view that term, man?
The first chapter of the Bible actually tells us that under that name, which can also be a title, we should understand both genders, Adam and Eve. So it is a term inclusive of both genders.
Okay, maybe a modern-day equivalent, something like humankind or something like that.
That's right, yes.
Okay. What about the fact that humans are created in God's own image? Does God have, you know, two arms and two legs? Do we somehow look like God? What does that mean to be created in God's image?
Well, it is interesting, I mean, to when you take that question to think, you say, does God have an arm or a leg? Well, the answer would be yes, in a sense, because in Scripture we see the arm of the Lord. So I know where we're going with this ultimately, but there are these vivid descriptions we have in the Old Testament of, you know, God's arm, you know, God being seen. You know, Moses sees God's backside, right, you know, on the mountain. So there is a description of God we see in the Old Testament that is very, very represented very, very graphic, very, very visually. So
as a human, descriptions of God which seem to indicate that he appears as a human. Is that what you think the intent of this phrase is?
There are a number of proposals, and we can agree on one thing, that the image of God means more than one thing. Mm. And I'm thinking here of a special type of relationship between God and the human beings. That is a concept that comes out of the creation story. Another possibility is that when we think of the images, if we do a word study in the Bible and outside of the Bible, images or monuments were set up very often to signal the presence of a powerful person in a land, in a territory, and so on. So another concept would be that the human beings were to be God's representative. On the earth. Then the idea of plurality, for example. In Genesis 1:26, it says, then God, and the word used for God is in the original language in the plural, said, let us make humankind in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and so on. And then in verse 27, it says, so God created humankind in his own image, in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. So there's an interesting interplay here that God's name is in the plural, he speaks in the plural, and he creates what is very often referred to as the crown of creation. And there is the concept of plurality there.
Okay. That word is Elohim, which you say has the plural ending. So, yeah.
Which again could be translated as the Godhead. Mm-hmm. That the Godhead was at work in the story of creation.
Now, in those texts that you read, it talked about them ruling, let them rule. Well, one of the questions that I think many modern readers have as they look at this story in Genesis is, in what way are humans to rule? And I guess more specifically, is there a certain gender who is just set up from creation with better abilities to rule? Did I ask that in a way that was diplomatic enough? Are there indications in this story, before the fall, before sin entered the world, that somehow Adam was created in some sense superior to Eve? And I'll throw out a possibility, something that I've heard people use before. Isn't it true that Eve was created as a helper for Adam?
Implying that.
Well, you know, help me get this, help me cook food for me.
She's his assistant, right?
Yes, that Adam would be
sort of
the boss, and then he has a helper that will do what he
asks
him to
do. Well, you know, we do have evidence, quote unquote, in this account. I mean, at least Genesis chapter 3, don't we?
Okay.
It could be argued that and he would rule over her. So it has been interpreted that
sure.
way.
Well, sure, it has been. I'd like for us, though, to focus maybe before before sin entered the world. But from the very beginning, is it a sort of hierarchy which God has ordained? Either of you like to speak to that issue?
I'm not surprised that people have raised the possibility that one gender dominated the other one from the beginning. And it is so difficult to read the description of this ideal and sinless world without reading our own thoughts, our own culture, practices, a lot of baggage into it. And yet if we exercise an effort to be objective before the fall, there is no proof that there was any type of inequality between the genders, and coming to the term helper, which in the original Hebrew is ezer, when we do a word study throughout the Bible, it is mostly used of God. It is used of human beings as well, but mostly of God. And here come names like Eliezer, Lazarus, Ebenezer. Most of these references are references to God, the names scattered throughout the Old Testament. God is the helper par excellence.
Yeah.
So how can we say that, you know, that this title implies inferiority?
Well, I like read verse 27, I like verse 28 if I can read that one. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah.
It goes on. So this is not, you know, God said to Adam, this is what you to do, and get Eve to be your personal assistant. God addresses both of them in this role.
So helper then, just to kind of recap here for a moment, the term helper, which is applied to Eve elsewhere in the Bible, most frequently is applied to God. So unless we're prepared to say that God is somehow inferior to us, then we probably shouldn't say on that basis that Eve somehow was created as inferior to Adam. I've asked this question before as well of people, and I think it highlights maybe a similar point here. Who is it that is superior, the one who helps or the one who needs help? And we maybe shouldn't make too much of that here. But we probably also should not read this passage as a sign of God's elevation of Adam over Eve.
Right. And even the word that follows, suitable for him, if we check this expression in the original language, literally it means someone who looks into the face, who is equal, who stands up to, and so on. In Hebrew, kenegdo is very often used for someone who supports another being and also can confront it if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
There are two meanings to the preposition.
Okay. Now, we, of course, are skipping all kinds of things here in the story, but as we move to chapter 3, we read of the results of Adam and Eve's sin. And God curses them. Or does he? Now, there are a number of interesting quotations that could be read from Christian history. I'll just read one from Calvin here. He wrote that a woman was, and I quote, more guilty than the man because she was seduced by Satan and so diverted her husband from obedience to God that she was an instrument of death leading to all perdition. It is necessary that woman recognize this and that she learn to what she is subjected. This is reason enough why today she is placed below and that she bears within her ignominy and shame. So as a result of
the sin that occurred somehow, the implication here is that a curse rests upon Eve. Is that what the text says?
With all respect to Calvin and maybe other people who might share the same opinion, I would like to say that in Genesis chapter 3, nowhere do we find that the human beings were cursed by God. In fact, we find the opposite, that even though God outlines here the consequences that will come with the presence of sin, God still took care of the human beings, and he tried to help them out. But we do not find the idea of human beings being cursed.
I think also the passage, I like at least going to the New Testament in 1 Timothy chapter 2, talking about this issue of, you know, Eve sinning and so forth, which Paul says, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression, and talked about Adam actually being the one who sinned. I mean, it looks at Adam as the one who actually deliberately, intentionally, knowingly chose to go down that path where Eve was deceived. Mm-hmm. So I think to say, you know, some way there's some sort of, you know, blame game, and then because that she's cursed and she's put in subjective to him, mm-hmm. doesn't seem really to fit the context what the Scripture says.
It is true, isn't it, that in the Scripture you can read description of the fall. Sometimes it seems as if Eve is the one to blame. Other places, Adam, and maybe, Carl, we should just remember your point that trying to blame one or the other is probably missing.
And it's also a consequence of sin, isn't it?
Yeah, something which comes after sin.
Blaming someone else.
Now, this, for the next 12 weeks, we'll be looking at other couples from the Old Testament. Most of them are married couples, nearly all of them, as we might expect. Is there anything that we learn about marriage from this opening account, the account of Adam and Eve? Is marriage, I don't know, is it a good thing, an okay thing? Is it part of God's original plan? What might we have to say here as we close about marriage?
I think we see some bright pictures of marriage, the ideal, the harmony, the joy, the blessing, the companionship.
Mm-hmm.
But we also see because of sin, it also becomes a relationship that has become very fragile and very hurt. And it's easy for that to almost disintegrate and to destruct. Mm-hmm. And it's only through the power of God that healing and unity can really be achieved in that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay, marriage as a wonderful ideal. It's in creation. God creates Adam and Eve, brings them together, blesses them, tells them to be fruitful and multiply. So marriage is a good thing, But as Carl noted, and as we will see throughout this quarter, that ideal has been tainted by sin, touched by sin in some very profound ways.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Thank you, Zdravko and Carl, for your thoughts and participation today. Thanks also to Susan Michael, program engineer. And finally, thank you for listening in. For Good Word, this is Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.